The Spinoff Podcast Network. Ready to rediscover the joys of cycling? With over 300 kilometres of cycle paths across Tāmaki Makaurau, jumping on your bike and going for a ride is such a fun way to discover the city from a different perspective. Cycling is getting more and more popular across Auckland, so now's a great time to join the hype and give cycling a go. Head to at.govt/cycling to find your nearest cycleway today. Skinny are helping you show how smart you are with the 1Q quiz, an all-new, super challenging and super quick daily quiz built by The Spinoff. Every Monday, Skinny are giving you the chance to prove you're smart with the Skinny Extra Credit question. Get it right, and you'll get the chance to score yourself some Skinny Extra mobile credit so you can text, call, or even video call your group chat and gloat about how big your brain is. T's and C's apply.
Tēnā koutou katoa, welcome to Dietary Requirements, the Spinoff's food podcast, ko Simon de Tokowingoa, and I am your host. As always, I'm joined by the Spinoff's food editor, Alice Neville. Kia ora, Alice.
Kia ora, Simon.
And this is a very special episode of the podcast because it's very much a family affair, as well as co-host Sophie Gilmore. Our guests this month are Sophie's mum, Emerald. Hi, Emerald.
Simon.
And her sister Mimi, who will be barging into the studio later. The three of them form a formidable family dynasty in the hospitality scene. Emerald was responsible. Oh, here she is,
Mimi.
Right.
Hi,
now.
Mimi.
Come on.
Hello, Mimi Gilmore.
You're meant to be much later.
Mimi Gilmore.
Mimi's come from an obstetrician appointment.
Yeah. Welcome.
She's having a baby.
We're having another baby.
Yay.
I love how it's the collective now. Yeah, I'll be fine.
Sorry.
Emerald was probably responsible for Auckland's most decadent decade in the hospitality scene with Club Mirage and Clichy. Is that right?
That's correct, Simon. 1972, and I was giving my age away here, 21 years old, and we opened the door on Clichy downtown in what was there. It was next door to the bus station then, and it's now the fabulous Britomart Centre of Auckland.
And a building you inherited, Mimi?
Yes. The first Mexico that we ever opened actually was in what was Clichy, and then later Tatler and Spectator Bar when we were younger.
Very serendipitous.
Initially a fine arts student, Mimi disobeyed Emerald's strong advice not to go into hospitality.
It'll be the ruin of you, girl.
Well, it hasn't, which is really exciting.
No, she's still going.
Started in Sydney.
Yes. Well, I started in Auckland, actually. I worked in hospitality all through uni and from the age of 16, and then worked for Mark Warbank for a very long time, and Melissa. And that was a lot of fun. And then I went to Sydney, worked in advertising, and then fell back into hospitality and events. And here I am, still.
It's kind of your calling.
It is my calling. It's definitely hospitality is my life's passion, mixed with a bit of creativity, you know?
Yes. So Mimi is now, of course, the brains behind Burger Burger.
And one of the brains.
I was going to say, how would that go?
Yeah,
down?
There's a few of us now.
I made that mistake previously when writing about Mexico as well. get a lot of credit.
Look, she's the only one here, so.
Yeah. No, I mean, look, there's a lot of moving parts, as well. I'm sure we'll discuss in the restaurant game, and I definitely have passion for food and strength in the creative areas, but some of the more, you know, serious but crucial areas like numbers and other such things. I have some other experts that help me with that.
It always helps.
Yeah.
And you all know Sophie, but I don't think we've done a proper history. Sophie and I started out in hospitality pretty much a similar
together.
Time at Chibo, working for Jeremy Turner, causing lots of trouble and having lots of fun. Like Mimi, Sophie's route back into a career in hospitality was sort of colourful. She was a lawyer before opening Bird on a Wire with her husband David, and cousin-in-law, Rico, and very good friend and ex-boyfriend, just for a little bit of extra complication, Ben Grant.
Whole squad.
Which they sold last year.
Yes, in March last year.
After 5 years of very hard work?
Yeah, it was 6 years woe to go, but I was in the business working full-time for four.
I guess probably try and forget about the Nina takeaway period, or was that a highlight?
Oh, no, absolute highlight. Yeah, that was kind of one of the funniest few months of my life.
So before Bird on a Wire was Bird on a Wire, it was a historic Ponsonby Road late night takeaway joint called Nina's Takeaways, and that was briefly staffed by all our friends. And
when we took over, the lost property drawer was full of wallets and driver's licenses that belonged to all of our friends. So it was obviously like the place that everyone would go at the end of the night and just lose all their stuff when they were drunk on their way home. But it was
and get a burger.
Yeah, it was pretty hilarious once we took over, sort of deep frying everything from paper plates to whole chickens.
And now Sophie is the boss of Delicious Business. How would you describe Delicious Business? I think of it as a sort of a hospitality consultancy. That
yeah, look, I'm working on the elevator pitch. It's the aim of the game is that it's a full service hospitality consultancy. So there's me and three others that are the kind of founding members, and then we've got other consultants that we work with. And the idea is that we can go into a restaurant that is struggling and help them figure out why they're struggling, or we can help someone that's starting up a restaurant get all their ducks in a row and execute the practical side of it. And the other half of the business outside of the consultancy is to host food talks and teach people how to cook and have awesome parties and do supper clubs.
Nice.
Because not to be forgotten.
Sometimes it's just areas that they might have weaknesses in, though, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people go into hospitality and it's a multifaceted business, and more often than not, their strength is the creative aspect of it, because that's where their passion is.
And it's a dream, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the thing that often lets them down is the lack of understanding in the other areas. So
lack of understanding in many, many cases.
Yeah, well,
of the legal requirements, so their financial management. They have the dream, how it will look, what wonderful food they'll produce.
Sure.
Nothing
else.
I always thought running a cafe, bar, or restaurant was the fastest way to make $1 billion.
Fastest way to lose $1 billion.
Walk in the park.
That's where you went wrong.
Very funny.
And on top of the Gilmore Girls, we have a sixth degree of connection today with a group of Auckland Dio School students who have joined us in the podcast. They're actually from Sophie's husband's class. So this is a crazy family affair today. Hi, girls. How are you?
Hi, Mr. Day.
There's three groups of them, so they're going to come and go from the podcast. So don't be alarmed when you hear feet moving and doors opening and closing. We're just going to continue on with it. But we wouldn't be here without the support of our wonderful sponsors, Freedom Farms. So a quick shout out to them. They believe that everyone who eats meat has a responsibility to know how that animal has been farmed, and they're dedicated to providing you with the best pork, free-range chicken, and eggs. They're really, really great. Ask for the product at the supermarket if they don't stock it, and buy it if they do. Final piece of housekeeping. Unfortunately, after sarcastically joking throughout the episode last month that we were going to set off the fire alarm while Al Brown was cooking us fritters, when he left, we did set off the fire alarm, and we got in a little bit of trouble for using the camp stove as a non-approved piece of cooking equipment in the office building. So that's been sent home.
Boo.
Yeah, that's quite gutting. I'm just looking around. Oh, there is a sensor in here.
It was actually Alice.
It was me. Okay.
Alice started cooking some fritters and then went to check some emails.
I left for like 10 seconds to start cleaning up in here, and I thought I thought Simon had his eye on the fritters, but.
When I left
I
here.
I get told off if I interfere with people's cooking.
And when I listened to the podcast that once it had gone live last time, there was probably three or four times during it that Simon kept on saying, if we set off the fire alarm, it'll be funny.
Yeah.
But if we set off the fire alarm, it'll be funny. And then the fire alarm goes off. I was hosting the Burger blind dates around the corner. The entire building was evacuated. It was an absolute
shambles. And turns out it was. Three fire trucks turned up. They have to go through the full process of double checking everything.
And there's quite a significant fine involved. Yeah. Yes, Duncan, we don't have to wear that yet. You've talked you out of that.
Well, the fireman took me aside and he wasn't angry. He was disappointed. But, well, we're not allowed to cook anymore. We can definitely still eat and drink. We initially thought we'd discuss how to make a perfect cup of tea. But that didn't seem very Emerald Gilmore, so we've got a bottle of Prosecco.
That's better, Simon.
The discussion about it, Simon said, does Emerald drink tea? And before I had a opportunity to respond, Ella said, I always imagine Emerald only drinks champagne.
From dawn till dusk.
Both of you are big tea drinkers. It always surprises me that you both are very particular about your tea in the morning.
I love tea. First thing every morning and the last thing every night.
I love the coffee.
And just like Jacinda Ardern, Emerald hates Earl Grey.
Anything other than your basic gumboot tea. The fear of my life would be lapsang souchong or Earl Grey.
She says basic.
Second.
She actually means Dilmah, which is not that basic. But.
Why? I just don't understand what you would have against Earl Grey tea. It's so delicious.
Well, we chose Prosecco over tea, so let's not go down a tea rabbit hole.
Okay.
And we've also just arrived at one of my favourite cooking food seasons, which of course is hot cross bun season. There goes one round of girls.
Hi, girls.
Hi, girls.
And then comes another.
Yeah.
And so it's hot cross bun season, which is a very favourite of mine.
I love hot cross buns. I don't know why.
This is mainly as a vehicle for butter.
Well, they are great.
Yeah, I don't know.
The slightly savouriness, the very sweetness of it.
Hi, girls.
We've got raisins.
In comes the next group of Dio girls.
Hello,
you
girls.
You can sit on the ground if you like, girls.
Yeah, just come in.
Simon, did you decide I wasn't allowed a Prosecco?
No, I passed you the bottle and you were to do with it what you will.
Here we are. Here's a cup you can put the water in.
No, that's okay.
Emerald just ditched her water and filled up the Prosecco.
Of course I did. So apart from that one cup of tea, I do drink champagne all day, Alice.
Yeah. You're not far off.
Pleased to hear it.
So throughout the episode, we're going to munch on some hot cross buns as the first part of the spin-off's power ranking of Auckland's hot cross buns over the Easter period. These are from our friends beneath the office at Mian, who do incredible baking and chocolate, the scent of which wafts into our windows and can make it very, very hard to work.
And gelato, I just went in there to get a coffee and I was like, is it too early to eat gelato?
Never. You're pregnant, you can do it.
I did that last time and turned into a whale. This time looks at me and she's like, I hope you're eating those almonds.
Thank you.
This was something I actually wanted to talk to you about, Mimi, and seeing as you've brought it up, we'll move straight into it.
Okay.
Have you had any weird pregnancy cravings for certain types of food?
Yes, but not as much as I think. I think last time I thought that I really wanted to have them, so I was looking for them. And this time, quite early on when I was quite sick, I was really obsessed with tomato and toast. And I just got this, I got from Sabato this, caper, caper pesto kind of thing. And I just honestly had about three jars of it and every tomato under the sun on Vogels with lots of butter. Yum. That's basically all I ate for weeks.
Last time it was Kit Kats is all she ate for weeks.
When I was pregnant with Olympia, I had literally a drawer on my desk at work that just, I would wait for Countdown to sell them for a dollar a Kit Kat and just fill up my drawer.
Emerald was snatching off.
Oh,
do you mean it?
To be honest, this time I'm actually craving healthy fresh food more than.
Thank you, Sophie.
But maybe it's something to do with the time of the year
for dinner tonight, so that's lucky.
Oh yeah,
silver beet tart. Sounds healthy.
So you're dining together.
We are.
So when I think of the Gilmore family, the first thing I think of is eating together, both as a family, but then welcoming a much broader extension of that idea of whānau into your meals, which has obviously included me. You've taught me a lot about food, especially, you know, all three of you, but especially you, Emerald. I remember digging for potatoes at Waiheke, being sent to the Auckland Fish Market because the prawns at the supermarket did not qualify for your linguine.
It weren't up to scratch.
Has food always been a part of the Gilmore life? Is it part of your parenting?
Yes, definitely. And I became obsessed with food quite early on in my life because my father was in the Air Force and we moved backwards and forwards to Singapore several times. One of those times involved us spending about a month living in a hotel. And my mother was a very ordinary cook. And then here I am, and given a menu and allowed to choose, and this delicious food came to me. And it was that moment my life changed. And probably the girls, since, you know, it spills on. Yes.
I can see that as a little girl, that you get given a piece of paper and you get to choose what you want, and then the food gets delivered to you. That
Amazing.
Does feel quite life-changing.
I think that we were always just, I think everyone always encouraged us to be involved in cooking. And I think also we were encouraged from a very young age to sit down and share a meal with each other. So Sophie and I sat down and set a table and lit a candle, and we had this mini table, and it would become an occasion. And if obviously, as we got older, we would have done it as a family always. And I think that's something that I'm definitely most passionate. I mean, I love delicious food, but I think for me, hospitality is that moment of people sitting around a table and, you know, stopping, the world stops, and you talk to each other. And that's, I think, what you ingrained in us from a very young age is to use that occasion to share it with people that you love and that you want to have those conversations with. So,
and often you don't necessarily feel like you've got the energy for it, or it seems like it's not something that's on the top of your list of things to do, but every time you do, you feel grateful. There's always a good conversation, and everyone always walks away feeling better. And I was just thinking, when Simon said that before, you know, you two are having dinner tonight together. Last night, Mimi cooked dinner for David and I and one of our other friends, Clifton. So it's definitely something that we all share.
That's how you
The quote, Emerald.
Yes.
It's the perfect time.
Oscar Wilde. Oscar Wilde, I said to Simon earlier, I'd remembered an Oscar Wilde quote. After a good dinner, one can forgive anybody anything, even one's own relatives.
Yeah, so true, yeah. And I think it's funny watching my husband's family. I think when I turned up on the scene, I mean, they definitely like to share occasions, but food for them was just a fuel. And, you know, I've been there now around them for 6 years, and to see that their interest as a family has just slowly grown in what we're eating and how we're eating, and them even experimenting and then getting, like, his little he's not that little anymore, 16-year-old cousin says that his favourite time of the whole year is at Christmas time when I cook the big family dinner.
Yeah. It's sharing love, really, isn't it? It sounds a bit corny, but, you know, the door is always open and everyone is welcome.
Yeah.
You share the love that you have for the people in your life.
Emerald's tearing up.
Going mad.
I didn't. Yeah.
Well, Mimi was doing it just before as well, which is why I think it's so cool that the three of you turned a passion for both food and drink, but also giving that to other people into careers. And I think you've all been a part of very distinct pieces of Auckland's hospitality scene. Emerald, I'm especially fascinated by yours because I wasn't actively participating.
Come on, you can say.
Oh, no, I was born for some of it, but I definitely wasn't actively participating in Club Mirage.
Yeah, no. Sound like a hope.
What was it like?
Well,
people have described it as Auckland,
on the wall.
Auckland Studio 54. Is that close?
Well, and yet still people will say that to me. There hasn't been a really decent nightclub since then. But it's often said, and I'll take that. We opened Cliché, as I said, I was very young, 21, and by the time I was 27 or 8, we were getting a bit tired and bored. You know, what's next? Went to London, went to a nightclub called Annabelle's, which was terribly smart.
Still
and
is.
We fully got delusions of grandeur right then and there and came home and worked on Club Mirage. And it was sophisticated. It was very sophisticated. And yet it was we also had the first flashing, colourful dance floor.
Ooh.
It was disco time.
Wow.
So the later part of the evening.
Those are awesome. Let's bring those back.
Yeah.
They had one of those in Dunedin.
Did you ever see
They did that at Monkey Bar.
I actually recreated Club Mirage in Britomart.
For a party, for one weekend.
Yeah, because when I first met Peter Cooper, the only thing that he wanted to talk to me about was the years of his days in Clichy,
yeah,
in Club Mirage. Like he was just so excited to
I
be able
like
to.
We spent our whole lives listening to people's stories about those.
And so then we recreated it, the full dance floor, the palm trees. I mean, I think it was different to what we think a nightclub is now. It was very glamorous and had a very strong kind of theatrical theme, and it was very
It was very sort of sophisticated.
Element of
you had to get dressed up.
Yes, it was sophisticated.
People drank champagne.
All from the moment they arrived to the moment they left.
Tell me a story the other day. There was a dress code, and Emma would stand at the door and check everybody off. And someone turned up in jeans once.
No,
yeah, who was it? Now Jeffrey Hoey, that was his name. Yeah. I remember. So we had a little peephole at the door at the top of the stairs. Looked through. There's Jeffrey Hoey. Jeans on. So I opened the door and I said, Jeffrey, you know that there's a dress code and I can't let you in because I've previously stopped five or six other people coming in for this reason. And he said, OK, well, I can sort that out, and just stood there and took his jeans off.
That's all right.
And you still know Jeffrey?
Well, I just haven't seen him for a long time. I hope he's not listening to this.
Still taking his pants off in public.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you know what I always think is quite interesting about the beginning? I was thinking about the beginning of food being such a big part of our lives is that I've moved house recently and we go back through like your stories from when you were little at school, and all of my stories are about what I ate. It'll literally be like, we went to a restaurant, Alice had the spaghetti carbonara, Mimi had the spaghetti bolognese, and it will just be a list of what everyone ate, and then it says the end, like there's nothing else happens in the story. So obviously we've just been a little piggy from the beginning.
It's always great when food means so much more than sustenance, though. It's so important that it can be a part of socialization and events. And
but also, I think it's, we've seen trends change over the last years, and like you said with Freedom Farm, you know, like I think that being conscious of the fact that it is, you know, something that we need in life, but something that we enjoy, and that there's a very layered process in bringing that to our plate. And I think it's been really wonderful over the last few years that people are starting to think, you know, outside of, it's not just something you buy at a supermarket and it lands on your plate and you eat it because you need it to survive, you know?
You should understand the effort that goes into producing wonderful fruit and vegetables, for example.
Yeah.
It's very,
and even
very
like,
hard.
You know, like Stephen always says to me, he goes, I don't know why, how you do that, you know, because I'll often spend an hour and a half, I sort of indulge myself on the weekends, obviously, because I have more time, but I will go out of my way to, you know, cook things that might take an hour and a half, 2 hours. And you can see how generations in, you know, Europe, whether these mothers would spend full days, you know, making pasta from scratch and, you know, but
all day, every day was spent gathering ingredients to make food and the making of it. That was the traditional way.
And now we just, I mean, we spend so much time rushing around, don't we, that I do think it's nice that there's elements of it that we're paying more attention to, whether we do it ourselves necessarily. But there are choices that you can make in what you purchase along the way.
Whether you buy your food from Ripe, we have the most wonderful, wonderful salads, don't they?
I call them my wife.
Yes.
The Ripe Deli. The biggest takeaways for me out of Ballymaloe when I went to the cookery school last year was that exact thing about being, they basically, the people that run it, one day there was this tomato on the plant and the woman that owns Ballymaloe is called Doreena Allen, and she practically burst into tears. She said, oh, it's just so thrilling, isn't it? Don't you feel like giving thanks to Mother Nature or something? You know, and she was just so grateful for the produce that was there. And I think that part of the effort and energy that we put in and the time that we put into food there felt like it was giving it the justice that it
deserves. It's actually a lot harder than it looks. I attempted a vegetable garden this summer, and it was like having another child.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of things that I did not know, and I was
<It's> really hard.
Failed miserably, but then I think herbs definitely are my strong point.
Girls, you could tease Mr. Holmes about his corn harvest. Ask him how that's going. I think the plan was for there to be about 12 plants, and there might be about 4 left. Mm.
I've produced about 5 cherry tomatoes this summer.
And your lunch.
Alice, congratulations, Alice. So, curious croppers, these really fascinating people, the Tringhams, have got a wonderful crop of tomatoes going on out in Clevedon.
They're going to be my lifetime supplier of tomatoes after my tomato harvest this summer.
Bye, girls. The next lot going out, the next lot coming in.
They look overwhelmed with just joy and delight.
You know, it's not often you're in the presence of 5 geniuses.
Your brains
could barely count
to
5.
Underwhelmed, did you say?
I said overwhelmed. Hi, girls. Here's another bag.
Sit on the ground, or else you'll get sore.
Yeah, and I think that the nicest thing about the fact that we get to talk about food on this podcast. And I remember writing it in one of my stories for the spin-off when I was at Ballymallow, was that I've always kind of felt silly about the emphasis that I place on food in my life, like more than your average person. And it's just so wonderful to be in the company of people that feel the same way.
Yeah,
well, I think it's growing, though. There's an increasing understanding of, like Mimi just talked about, the huge amount of effort and energy and resource and the sacrifice that you know, people and animals are making for us to live and to eat well. And that's important.
And that food and cooking isn't always just sort of some frivolous pastime. It's actually really important in all kinds of cultures, and it brings people together.
Yeah.
In all sorts of ways. In terms of sustenance, yes. But also in terms of hospitality and bringing together what we said.
It's kind of ceremonial, isn't it? I mean, it's very
good word.
It's very, in every culture it exists. It's like music, ritual, you know? Yeah. It's like this language that just brings
fuel.
I think I read a chef who said once that, you know, we're all created equal and we sit around a table. And I thought that was really wonderful. There is just something about, you know, and yes, sometimes you laugh and sometimes you fight.
It's
sometimes
a great
you
leveler.
Tell jokes, you
it
know.
It is a great
but
leveler.
But it's this level, there's something very leveling about it.
We all eat and we all love it.
Yeah, we talk about that at Everybody Eats, that it's like the great social equalizer. Everyone's got to eat.
True.
Mimi, you were part of a very important moment in Auckland's hospitality history as well, which was the rejuvenation of Britomart.
Yes. I think I turned up at the right time at the right place, which was a lot of fun. And as I said earlier, Peter Cooper is a New Zealand businessman who's been very successful internationally, but his passion was to rebuild this area of Auckland, and he had a very intentional kind of plan in place. And I came back from Sydney for what I thought would be temporarily to run the food show for the Rugby World Cup.
Right.
And in the process, I met 3 gentlemen who had started a nightclub and another bar in Britomart, and I think they very quickly realised that I knew a lot about food and they didn't.
You were the missing link.
And they knew a lot about bars.
And they knew a lot about bars, and that maybe that would be a match made in heaven. And so we joined forces and did district dining in Britomart, as well as we ran the Nathan Club, which is where we recreated the nightclub during the cup. And then we opened Mexico.
The first one.
I remember that one.
The
best one.
Building in the same place that my mother had had her restaurant in 20 years old, earlier.
30 years earlier.
Isn't
that
serendipitous?
Yeah. I think that time, when I think about it now, and I was speaking to someone about it yesterday, we were living together then, Simon, at the time. We had a flat on Franklin Road, but it honestly must have been Auckland's biggest party, or either that or we were just right amongst it. I felt like
it was a big turning point for the hospitality scene in New Zealand, and especially Auckland, because I think the Rugby World Cup was such a significant, event in bringing international guests. And I think we all kind of, I think there was a sort of like, oh, we better, you know, put on a good show. And it was the first time I sort of had an injection of attention. And also, I think, you know,
first since the America's Cup when they opened up the
viaduct. Yeah. And also I think, you know, generations, I mean, there was this whole time where there was, everyone would leave Auckland, and I think a lot of us came back, and there was a lot of, it was kind of the beginning of when people sort of started thinking, oh, actually, maybe I'll hang around, this could get cooler.
It all happened when I lived in London over that time, and I was only away for 2 years. But then I came back and was like, oh my God, when did all this happen? Like, the change was nuts.
It was,
and
that very was Britomart.
Yeah, that was Britomart.
Yes.
Britomart,
I mean,
and
remember coming home.
The Sky City Precinct.
Yeah. And Ponsonby Central and stuff, I'm sure, was that open around that time? About that time.
It just was an explosion, wasn't it?
But it went from dining out well being both very expensive and a little bit uptight.
Yes.
Where you thought for a nice meal it had to be fine dining, in quotation marks, to you could go out to Mexico with a big group of friends and have
the tacos was $6.
The fish taco as well, and the fried chicken, and the beetroot dip.
I'd been, like, obviously, lived in Sydney. Lived in Sydney for 5 years in the lead up to that. And Sydney, you know, was saturated with these really densely focused creative offerings that were highly affordable, therefore regularly visited. And Mexican definitely was the favourite of the moment over there. And when I came back to Auckland, you know, I guess I just talked about that, and I was like, why are we not doing that? Because, you know, and we talked about doing Mexico, and we thought we'd give it a whirl. And within, like, 2 weeks, it was nuts. We had doubled
like a 2-hour waiting.
I basically didn't sleep for about 3 years. But I think it was also Javier, who we found to be the chef, was a really, really talented man.
And Carmona,
he just launched his own.
He's amazing.
Indian street food.
Yep.
Eastridge, I think
he's definitely one of the most talented chefs I've ever worked with.
Really?
He just has this, and his background is, his family is Spanish, so he really, you know, I mean, Warren also helped with the first menu for Mexico. To be fair, that is Warren's fried chicken recipe, which people still talk to me about today. But I think you're right, Simon. I think it was cost effective. It was so immersive in every way, you know. I mean, Brendan, who is actually about to help
themed.
Me with a new restaurant, was just this master of colour, and there was just so much intensity, and it was kind of a bit too hot and a bit too crammed, and the music was loud and the food was delicious.
Paper mache-ing posters that you'd put in frames that you bought off Trade Me, and then shellacking over them and tea staining things, and like it was a massive arts and crafts project too. But I also just, like the that was the beginning of smart casual. We only had
Mexico kind of did that, right?
Yeah,
and
we only
everyone
had quick
was
service,
like, "Hey, this is awesome."
Smart or fine food, dining, but pretty casual everything else, which was the best part.
But you used to go out for dinner in Auckland on a Monday night, and it would just be absolute tumbleweed. And I think that the difference now is that it's like the restaurants are full all the time.
Yeah. But you're right, Simon. I mean, what we took was, you know, decades of experience in kitchens with food and applied all of that knowledge to humble, affordable street food in a way. So, you know,
I'm feeling slightly crushed here because I think there are pivotal moments in a city where things do improve enormously.
Yeah.
And for example, Clichy, was the right place and the right time, as you said about Mexico too. And we were booked out every lunch and every dinner for 10 years until we sold it.
Yeah.
And it was a casual place. It was based obviously on a French bistro.
Yeah, you said it was closest to Coco's Cantina kind
of
vibe.
Yes, today.
Well, outside
it would be
of the European
Cantina.
Kind of everyday meat and three, not meat and three veg, but that sort of very European style of
stitched
food.
Up restaurants.
Like
it was outside
Mexico
of that.
Was, you know, something that was ethnically driven.
Yes.
And I don't think, you know, I mean, yes, we've also had a lot of great Asian food in New Zealand because we have, you know, a great Asian population that contributes to that. But I think it was a combination of a lot of things. It was sort of a very modern experience with delicious food at a good price. It just hit the right point at the right time. And as Sophie said, it was off the back of the cup. So people were just pumped from that. And it just yeah, it was the right place, right time.
Did you see that same trend? Was it a trend that you identified that made you inspired to open Burger Burger as well?
Yeah, so I guess off the back of Burger Burger, of Mexico, I had learnt, obviously, there was a price point that people were willing to spend regularly. So I think what we saw in Mexico was people who were coming almost weekly.
Just topping Emerald up. I'm sorry. If everyone would like to keep track of her drinking.
5 to 12.
Yeah. And also that there was an appetite for people to be able to sit in a dining environment and enjoy that affordable food. So I think traditionally most burger joints in Auckland at the time were takeaway. And so I just had also, we had another burger offering in Sydney that we had also opened, but it was much more casual again. And so I kind of took what I'd learned from Mexico, which was people wanted to come and sit down and eat around a table, and there was a price point that they'd be willing to do that regularly. And we took and then we
absolutely
put that
delicious and absolutely fresh every single day.
Every single day. So we were obsessive about, I just blew my mind that like there were still just big bready bun burgers.
Yeah.
You know, with overcooked patties. And I was like, surely we can.
See, girls, you don't want bread buns. You want brioche buns.
Yeah, you spent a long time developing
brioche.
Your buns,
they are almost brioche, but they are treated almost like a sourdough. So they have a buttermilk in them. I think you didn't want to make them too eggy and rich, but they are the same texture as a brioche. So we obsessed about the bun. We obsessed about the beef patty. And the aim of the game was sit down, have a burger and a beer and some fries for $20.
Nice.
That was where we started.
Didn't you have some issues with trying to cook the patties medium rare and the
not till later. So MPI about 2 years ago kind of flagged that because even though our beef patties are 100% beef, they're still technically processed because they're minced. And the concern is that when they go through that mincing process, the surface of the meat heats up slightly, and then you put it back together again and cool it down. And MPI, I think there's been some outbreaks of certain bacterias internationally in some burger chains.
Right.
And I think they were sort of like preempting that. But, I mean, we don't have...
What's MPI?
Ministry of Primary Industry. Boo.
No. What do they have to...
So they
make everything up every day, all their patties. It's minced every day, started every day, and somebody called MPI can step in over the top of the restaurateur and tell them
MPI's
how they can cook
job,
their food.
MPI actually talked directly to the council, and the council then enforced what MPI's recommendations have been to them. So I think... You know,
it's part of a bigger mandate about food safety, and
I miss my medium rare burger.
Honestly, it's ridiculous.
No,
if you
request it, we can do it. Yeah, now, I mean, I think there was such an uproar in the industry that we
had to compromise a bit.
Yeah. Right. Bureaucrats can't tell you how to cook food in your own restaurant.
We have.
They'll try.
We have. Well, what are we getting to if they can, Simon?
Food control plan.
I'm moving there.
Through the council now. And so that just makes sure that we are testing, you know, meat temperatures and how we're refrigerating them. And, you know, we've never made anyone sick off the back of our meat patties.
No.
So this is a really big year for you, Mimi.
Yes.
You're having a baby and you're having a whole bunch of new
restaurants. We're opening 3 restaurants this year. So
Bye, girls. Goodbye, girls.
I'll see you soon. We are opening 3 restaurants this year. Yeah, so when we grew Mexico, we grew super fast, and it was a lot of fun, and we learned a lot of lessons. And this time, I think we were very conscious that we wouldn't grow as fast, and we would pay attention to the back end of the business, which are all the systems and the number crunching, because at the end of the day, that's really...
it's the only way you can
It's the only way
replicate.
That you can... Yes, sustainably grow. And so I can't believe we're turning 5 this year, which seems crazy in April. Burger Burger will be 5. But we will be opening, Christchurch in end of April. It's potentially the beginning of May. Mount Maunganui, so Tauranga in May, and then
apparently a real hub for great new food scene.
Yeah, it's all happening down in Tauranga Bay of Plenty. Yes, and then Commercial Bay, so downtown Auckland will September, October. Potentially November.
The building,
yeah.
How far behind schedule are they?
They've officially already postponed it by 6 months till September, so we're just waiting for an update currently.
When you're putting a subway beneath your restaurant.
Yes, yeah. The metro's beneath the building, isn't it?
There's a lot of reinforcing going on, but it's all really exciting locations. Obviously, first time that we've left Auckland, and downtown's pretty awesome because we're on level one on a corner and we kind of have sea views of the harbour, which is dreamy for a burger joint in downtown Auckland.
It'll be a beautiful spot. I think it's going to be Commercial Bay will actually change the game, I think, for Auckland, particularly for the
lunch market.
Oh, yeah. City workers.
But also tourism for us. I think like a big dream of mine, I mean, our burger dream is two things, was to become the most loved hospitality brand in New Zealand. And
big goal.
Yeah, just small
goals. They call it a BHAG, a big, hairy, audacious goal.
And also BHAG. To be the most inspiring place to work for under 25s.
Oh,
so
that's
both
cool.
Two big challenges ahead of us. But the other big focus for me is that I would love to become part of Brand New Zealand. I think that if, you know, we have such a massive tourism market, and if we can be somewhere that they can recognise to go and experience what genuine New Zealand hospitality feels like, and do that at a price that's accessible, and we're in lots of locations, and I think that would be pretty awesome if they could go away and say, you know, I mean, we have incredibly top quality meat,
produce.
We've just moved our fish supplier to a family out of Gisborne called East Rock, which is pretty exciting. They're pretty amazing, and their product is delicious.
I think two things on that. Apparently, which I think is quite embarrassing at the moment, cruise ships arrive in Auckland and people just shimmy off the ships and start wandering aimlessly up Queen Street.
Well, I was wondering exactly why you're saying Commercial Bay would apply to tourists, because to me it's very much central city.
There's towers
workers.
Above it for sure, but we but have what, a lot of...
Why would tourists go there?
For loads
when
of...
When they get off the cruise ship before they go to Waiheke.
Yeah, loads of people getting off
downtown
cruise
downtown Auckland.
And if you imagine now, just wandering up Queen Street, like that is
What level will you be on, though?
We'll be on level one on the restaurant lane, but you can stand down on, like, next to the ferry building and you'll be able to see us.
Right. It's already there. It was lit up, actually, when I went past at the weekend.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So some H&M has opened. But nothing on the level as...
There's a lot going on. I mean, there's a 240-room hotel going in above us. There's an office tower. There's, you know, there's a huge amount of
boutique, fancy one.
Huge amount of retail.
I think another interesting thing about that part of town is that for some reason we haven't really been... water focus, whereas that's one of Auckland's greatest assets.
Yeah.
So
that's what I'm most excited about.
Yeah, if you think about the way that retail's moving, hospitality's kind of following, so everyone's moving towards the water, which makes a lot of sense.
We're about to get kicked out of the studio, unfortunately, and we have the phone to go to long, so it's nice to have a hard cap on this week's podcast. But we've got three things to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if the Gilmore Girls read their notes that I sent.
We
have a little segment called Cook's Corner, where you provide a simple tip to our listeners on making their lives easier in the kitchen. So I've got a couple today. One is peeling ginger with a spoon.
Mm-hmm. Teaspoon.
It's a good one.
Wow.
So
one of my favorites is, and I don't know if you've mentioned this before, but cutting / crushing your garlic at the same time with the backside of your knife.
God damn you.
Yes.
Quite a few people have asked me that recently when they've watched me cooking. They're like, do you know that your knife is around the wrong way? And I'm like, yes, but I'm slicing and crushing at the same time.
And it gets the skin off really
easily. Peeling.
And peeling.
And peeling.
Yeah, bugger like chopping it all fine.
Another one I had is, it's a real favourite one for making the beetroot dip that I stole from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
is wrapping your beetroots in tin foil and roasting them and then peeling off their skin. It just falls off it's been sunburnt and you're taking off the blister. And it
takes sometimes, a bit of time, but it's
not too bad
off.
if you roast it for a little while. And sometimes I love the dirty flavor of beetroot, but I think in a number of cases, if you're putting it into a salad or making it into a dip, it really benefits from that dirt.
Being peeled off.
Being peeled off. And every time. All you get is sweetness.
Every time.
Don't get alarmed if your poo is red, though. Don't forget you've been eating beetroot.
Always back to the toilet talk.
There's a whole story about it.
My uncle, who's a GP and who's is married to a GP,
right.
Freaked out and went to A&E. And then he read halfway through his consultation. God, I know where I've been.
Yeah. Well, there we are. My tip would be clean up as you go.
Yes,
train yourself from an early age. Everything you use, just wash it, put it away. Keep your work surfaces clean, and then you can sit down to your dinner and
praise be, Emerald Miller.
Praise be.
And also, one more, but I definitely am a true believer in investing in good quality everything. If you have good quality produce to start with, you're going to have a better product at the end. I will never forget the day that Stephen's father, who is the ultimate bargain hunter at, on all occasions, let alone with food, but ate some Lewis Road Creamery butter. He was like, "Memes, what is this?"
Yeah.
And I was like,
"That actually tastes like
that is quality. Real butter.
Butter as it used to be."
Yeah. Well, it's unfortunate for Mian's entry into the competition, but it's unsalted butter.
Butter.
They gave us unsalted. Yeah. I saw them doing it. I didn't want
to. No. But you did. But why would you want salted butter?
Salt I always like.
No,
salt
you don't. Yeah, no. See, no, no, no. You don't want salted butter on a bun.
Have you read or watched salt, fat, acid, heat yet?
Yeah. Anymore?
So what I would say to
you
this,
don't want salt on.
No,
your,
but it's
I don't like salty
thing.
Food so though. I'm not a salty Emerald person. I'm not a pepper person.
Emerald is from the era of so the more delicate, unsalted flavours is the continental flavour. So that's France and, you know, the tarts, and that's from that time, whereas we are more accustomed to putting salt on everything to emphasise its flavour. So we like bold flavour, and I think that is a generational thing, because I noticed that there was quite a lot of things that had less salt in them, the more traditional quiches and things that I would like. At cooking school, and it's because that is mimicking Emerald likes the continental flavours
really?
Of Europe.
I'll never forget sitting near Emerald at Burger Burger, actually, and she was yelling across the restaurant at Mimi about the broccoli with almonds. Meme, very salty!
In front of all the customers.
Salty across the restaurant.
Too much salt.
The live
critique. I actually had a cheese roll at Orphan's Kitchen this morning, and I just very distinctly remember thinking when I was eating it, this is perfectly seasoned.
It's so nice when you notice something's perfectly seasoned.
Potentially one of the most delicious things I've eaten in a very long
good,
time.
Those things.
This is a very beautiful segue, because that can be Mimi's contribution to the next segment, which is the last meal, recommending somewhere you've been recently.
Oh, yeah. Orphan's Kitchen. I'm there 3 mornings a week for breakfast.
You see?
Nice.
Fish and Friends in Titirangi is the best fish and chips in the world. Former head chef of O'Connell Street Bistro, wanted to give back to his community. Beautiful fresh fish, hand cut fries, makes his own sausages. But you get to dine in the bush.
Come visit Simon.
You can have us all over, Simon. There you go.
See, what
that's
I will say is,
for the
what I will say is, God
dinner.
Save me from overly clever menus. And they make me lose the will to live.
Yeah. What's your favourite Emerald in Parnell?
Barulho. Barulho. I'm obsessed with Barulho.
Sarah and Nico down at Barulho, formerly at Maldito Mendes in Ponsonby Central.
Yeah, her food is
fantastic.
Their food is delicious.
Oh, their food is extremely impressive as well. Like, Emerald and I had this delicious salad that had Brussels sprouts and onion and bacon in it, and then it had grapes in it. And I picked up the grape and I was like, this grape's been peeled. They peel grapes.
We're running out of time rapidly, Sophie.
I went for only the second time in my life to Cassia last week for a family birthday dinner.
Was the first time my birthday?
Yes.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so I think I've been 3 times, but for some reason it just doesn't seem to be on the on my circuit of restaurants to go to, and I can tell you right now, the entrees came out and absolutely blew my mind. Richard and I were looking at each other sort of tearing up because it was so delicious. It is unreal. It's not super expensive. It was Wednesday evening. We sat down to eat at 9 p.m. and the restaurant was full. It makes you feel like you're in another country.
He's just such a beautiful human. They both are, really. They're just such a genuinely beautiful couple.
And my God, are they doing a good job.
Go back to episode one. Very beautiful interview with Sid and Chan Sarawat.
Simon's got a mouthful of hot cross bun.
Is the next thing we're doing discussing the hot cross bun? Because you could do that with your mouth full for something.
Can
for
I do my...
Yeah, go, Alice.
So I went to a pop-up at Clooney last week, which was a fundraiser for mental health. Mm. And it was the Illicit Project, which is Mitchell Tate, a chef who used to be at Clooney and now is based in the UK, but he came back. And Restaurant Chimera, which is Connor Merton's ex-Orphan's Kitchen and his partner Carly Black. And we ate lots of delicious things. I'm going to single out the dessert because it took me back to our bay leaf episode with Rosemary Dempsey.
Oh.
Because it was a bay leaf custard and it really, really, you could taste the bay leaf and it had like poached apricot, soft meringue, parsley oil. It was really nice because it was slightly savoury.
There's a lemon and bay leaf almost like a milk custard pudding in Anna Scott's, one of her books, which I have been eyeing up for a very long time. Yum. And I think I'm going to make it now that you've
brought it up. So many new recipes that I eye up and never get around to cooking. I've got to make sure I do.
Yeah.
So the final thing we're going to do today is rate our hot cross bun. I was a big fan. I thought the orange was very present, very nice texture, lots of cinnamon.
Mm. I'm a big fan of... toasted hot cross buns, and I didn't really miss the fact that that wasn't toasted. You did say it was warm, still fresh out of the oven.
When I got them, they were like, yeah, I had so to that's change probably the blocks why. In my hands. Mm. They were so hot.
So these are from Mian, and they've got, you're right, I think that people have differing feelings about the fruit in a hot cross bun. But
emerald's fruit is on the table.
Orange was a welcome addition for me. Obviously not for Emerald. And I thought it was great.
I thought they were nice and light and... But I, to be honest, I like quite a dense, dark, spicy hot cross bun.
I was going to say...
That would be my feedback, is it maybe a little bit more
These
spice,
are a crowd-pleasing hot cross bun. I quite like a, you know,
a
grown-up sort of a hot cross bun. That.
And it has been noted, I don't care for raisins and sultanas, which are a core component of hot cross buns.
I think for me it's more too much peel, like too much orange.
You can get them...
I like the orange.
I like the fruit.
The thing is, you can get them for all different tastes. So you can get them with chocolate in them, you can get them without fruit in them, but it's only the really average sort of supermarket dense dry ones that do all the different jazz. So if you're going to have them from a good place, I think you just need to...
You think you should try the Daily ones. Bread ones because they're interesting because they're obviously a sourdough base.
Yeah.
So they're different again.
I'm pretty devoted to Wild Wheat's hot cross buns, so I might bring one of those and we could have it.
I'd have to say the
cross bun off.
The only thing about the Daily Bread one is that it was very hot when it went into the box and it sweated and kind of compressed on the bottom, so just be careful.
Battle of the buns next episode.
And we didn't get to it this time, but a very funny new food trend is hot cross bun flavoured everything. We've had hot cross bun M&M's in the office this week.
Really?
And we've got some hot cross bun ice cream.
So unnecessary.
Yeah. We're going to have to eat it next time.
Good Lord.
We're about to be invaded by our favourite feminist podcast, On the Rag.
Woo!
It's that time of month where Leonie, Michelle and Alex get together.
Emerald should stand for that. You'd contribute a lot of genes, I'm sure.
They've just got a TV. They've just got an internet TV show as well. So keep your eyes peeled for On the Rag web series.
Yeah. Wicked. Thank you, Tina. Awesome production.
Yes.
And thank you, Gilmore Girls, for coming in. That was really fun.
Very cute to have the whole fam here.
Lovely.
Thanks. Bye.
Hello for Lover. I'm Madeline Chapman, editor at The Spin-Off. If you have the means, consider supporting our high-quality journalism by becoming a Spin-Off member. Sign up now at thespinoff.co.nz/donate.
Kia ora e te iwi, Te Aihe Butler here. podcast manager at The Spinoff. If you enjoy listening to our podcasts, consider supporting our mahi by signing up to become a Spinoff member at thespinoff.co.nz/donate. The Spinoff Podcast Network.